Growing Up in a Troubled World by Lydia Wiley Kellerman. Lydia Wiley Kellerman is the editor of G's Magazine and lives in Detroit, Michigan. There are guns in that movie, right? Yeah, but it's the bam-bam funny kind of shooting. A friend and I were trying to do what had seemed a simple task, pick a movie for our kids to watch together. It had been less than a year since I had to sit down with Isaac, then 5, and tell him his godfather had been shot through the lungs and we didn't know if he was going to be okay. I had sat at Ben's hospital bedside watching fluid being drained from his lungs after a long night of emergency surgery. Miraculously, my kids spent this summer with Ben, building spaceships in the backyard, flying to Mars, and writing riddles about chicken butts. But still, no. Gun violence can never be bam-bam funny. Isaac is in his 3rd year of lockdown drills at school. The first time I heard him say, "Mommy, we had a lockdown drill today," my heart skipped a beat. "Oh yeah? What's that like?" "We had to practice hiding in the closet and being so quiet in case a bear comes outside our window." While I wasn't particularly fond of projecting the fear onto woodland creatures, I realized I couldn't imagine how to explain the truth to these 4-year-olds. How on earth do you explain to a child that this country cares more about the NRA and owning guns than about the lives of children? How do you tell them that all around the country, people with semi-automatic weapons are walking into schools and going on indiscriminate shooting sprees where even preschoolers and kindergartners have been targeted? How do we reckon with the reality that there is literally no defensible logic we can offer to the minds and hearts of our children? There is no question that violence today disproportionately affects Black, brown, and poor children. Isaac was only 1 when Eric Garner was killed by police in New York City. I held Isaac on my lap beside the fountain in downtown Detroit. 50 Black bodies lay on the ground chanting, "Stop, I can't breathe." Again, rage, shame, and tears at the insanity that we would need to chant such words, knowing they had been systematically silenced till death. Across the bodies sat another mother holding her young son in her lap, whispering into his ear. I was struck by how different her words must be to her Black child, as I explained what was happening to my white child. Isaac would grow to know that police in our neighborhood were not here to keep our neighbors safe. Police presence could put them at risk of abuse, jail, or death. While I tried to whisper early words about systemic racism and violence, I did not have to whisper to him that his own body would always be targeted. I didn't have to tell him to be careful any time he left the house, praying he would come home. And that is the reason why it was so important that we bring our bodies to this place of protest. These days I am haunted by the images of children near the border locked in cages, by the reports of sexual violence, and by the sounds of their cries begging for parents who have been lost in a system of inhumanity. I think of the children on my block who have felt the violent attacks of ICE. I'll never forget being summoned to a neighbor's house at 2 a.m. We found our 8-year-old neighbor, who had been pulled from sleep, to translate to us her mother's words. 5 months earlier, her dad had been picked up by ICE after dropping his kids off at school. Since then, he had been in detention. Her dad was depressed, she said. He had tried to kill himself. My heart broke, and my rage grew for the world we have created for our children. It's been 8 years, and this month ICE is at the family door again. And while gun sales escalate and police and ICE stroll our streets, just 3 miles down the road, Marathon continues to refine its oil, polluting the air and making our neighboring zip code the most polluted in Michigan. At Isaac's school, the drinking fountains have been turned off because the lead levels are dangerously high. And after years of fight by the people of Detroit, the incinerator, located at the center of the city, has just burned its last trash, leaving behind empty buildings and escalated asthma and cancer rates. The violence of climate change already lives in the lungs and blood of our kids. And as I scroll through human extinction predictions that fall in my kids' lifetime, I can't help being paralyzed by anxiety at the thought of the violence that is yet to come. All this violence is more than our children can bear, and it is all so deeply connected to systems of power and money. For the truth is, in this country, it is overwhelmingly white men coming into school shooting our children, white men ordering deportation and child separations, white men building and maintaining violent police systems set to maintain systems of inequality, white men turning the gears of resource extraction and profit-driven motives for climate denial. I certainly do not say this to deny my own responsibility and accountability, but to name that we have an epidemic built on systems of patriarchy and white supremacy, perpetuating violence toward people and land. And yet, here I hold these beautiful, sacred children in my arms. Two white boys. Isaac, who is an animal encyclopedia, forces us to bike instead of drive when possible, and finds his heart freest when he's in the woods. Cedar, who laughs easily, cares for his beloved baby doll, and forbids us to eat the eggs from our chickens because they are just too beautiful. These two boys I love, yet already at such tender ages, they are being pulled down toy aisles filled with realistic toy guns used to pretend to kill one another. Already they are told not to cry when they fall and to be a man. We are filling them with love, in hopes that they will live by another way. And so at bedtime we fill their minds with tales of the rebels and saints who have gone before us and sing songs of liberation. We tell the old scripture stories that resist the myth of redemptive violence. We invite them along in the struggle as they crawl under pews during nonviolence trainings, hold candles at vigils, wave goodbye to Grandpa in handcuffs, and write him letters in jail. We throw block parties and know our neighbors, trusting in the security of community over fences and guns. We ritualize and hold death sacred by holding bunny and fish funerals, so the consequences of violence are not confused. We walk the woods and harvest tomatoes grown on abandoned lots, falling in love with the ground we stand on. We tell them again and again it's okay to cry. We tend their hearts, and we tend to our own as parents who love this world and our children. We let the grief and rage wash over us, propelling us only deeper into community, love, and resistance. May it be so.